The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, it's Championship Sunday, y'all. And even though the Cowboys aren't in it, I'm always excited about Championship Sunday because playoff football is the greatest time of year, in my opinion. And we have some excellent matchups coming up this weekend. I would say in both conferences, in the AFC and NFC, it's both the two best teams left remaining, not just because they are here, but because they have both dominated from start to finish. And I think all of these teams are absolutely deserving to be here. I feel like they're both going to be close matchups no matter what. And I think we're going to get an excellent championship Sunday here. So let's start it off with the AFC Conference Championship. We have the Cincinnati Bengals at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now the Bengals are a 1.5-point favorite. Which is kind of crazy because, you know, Kansas City is always a difficult place to play. But you know what? The Bengals have their number. The Bengals are 3-0 in the last year against the Chiefs. And that says a lot because nobody has really been able to own Patrick Mahomes in the league. But Joe Burrow and the Bengals, they most certainly do. And it's not just a Joe Burrow thing. I mean, this defense, they usually hold Patrick Mahomes in check. I mean, even if they have a good game like last year's conference championship game between these two teams, Kansas City ran out to a huge lead. I believe they had like a 21-0 lead or something crazy like that. And it looked like this game was not even going to be close. And then here comes Cincinnati, and they make some really big plays down the stretch. And they were able to take it to overtime and eventually get the win. So I'm expecting pretty much the same in this one. I don't know if it's going to go into overtime, of course, but I expect it to be a close game. But this Bengals defense just knows how to play Patrick Mahomes really well. They know how to cause some just crucial turnovers at crucial points in the game. I mean, even last year's game, they held Tyreek Hill in check. I believe there was a couple plays they made against Tyreek Hill to just kind of hold him back for a couple of scores. And I just feel like the Bengals they're playing with the utmost confidence. And as I said on Monday's show, I'm done picking against the Bengals. I've been kind of wavering on the Bengals all season long because I do think they're a good team. It's just their offensive line is such an issue. But if you really look at it, yeah, their offensive line is an issue. But who the fuck cares? Joe Burrow's been able to overcome it. Their two running backs have been able to overcome it. I mean, the production level on this offense is just crazy. So it doesn't matter that their offensive line isn't that good. And then on the defensive side of the ball, they're not the best defense in the league, but they know when to make the big plays. They cause turnovers at just inopportune moments for the offense, and they'll set their offense up in good field position, or they'll have goal line stands. I mean, you remember in the wild card round against the Ravens, they had that big goal line stand where they caused the fumble and they were able to run that thing back for a touchdown, and that was the game changing play. And that's really just kind of how this team plays. And so, and they're not scared. They've already won in Kansas City. This team is better than last year's Super Bowl team. So as I said, I'm not picking against the Bengals again as far as they go here. And then the Chiefs, what sucks for them is Patrick Mahomes did suffer in an ankle sprain in last week's game. It doesn't look like it's bothering him as much as you think it would, but I'm sure at some point as the game wears on, it could become an issue. And, you know, as I've been saying about Patrick Mahomes all season long, is he's added back in the element of him running. And that's been a big reason why they've been able to get a few wins in the regular season. And I kind of feel like it's a possibility that this could be the deciding factor in this game, where they're just going to, you know, kind of get Patrick Mahomes in a couple sticky situations that he won't be able to get out of. And I think Cincinnati's going to end up making the bigger plays in the end. And I've got the Cincinnati Bengals moving on to the Super Bowl 28-27. Like I said, I think it's going to be a close game. Could be one of those games where it comes down to the last play of the drive. But, you know, or last drive of the last drive of the game. But, you know, this Bengals team, they just play with a lot of confidence. And there's nothing wrong with the Chiefs. I mean, the Chiefs are an excellent team. Patrick Mahomes, in my opinion, is obviously the MVP of the season. And their defense is actually not playing bad either. So it's going to be a good-ass game. But like I said, I'm not picking against the Bengals right now. They're playing with some extreme confidence. And they're just a team I'm looking at. Like, I can't really pick against them. So I've got the Bengals moving on in this one. But I would not be surprised if we see the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. But because it is difficult to, because you know the Chiefs are probably playing with a chip on their shoulder because they're like, fuck, we have to solve this Bengals puzzle. And it's not to say they can't do it. They really absolutely could. But I'm just leaning towards the Bengals. All right, so let's move on to the NFC Conference Championship. We have the San Francisco 49ers at the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now the Eagles are a 2.5-point favorite. And the Eagles have just been the most dominant team all season long. They really haven't let up at all, even in their couple of losses that they had. Really no big deal. You know, I was looking at them stumbling into the playoffs, but it didn't matter. You know, last week was a statement game against the Giants. That is a division opponent. And while I didn't think the Giants were that good of a team, hey, it's the playoffs. And to dominate in a playoff game like that last week, that's a big deal. And, you know, the Eagles' defense is just one of the tops in the league. Their ground attack on offense is spectacular. But Jalen Hurts, he just continues to have another great year, too. It's difficult to choose between him and Mahomes, between MVP. I have Mahomes just because of the way he dominated the season. But you could easily go with Hurts as well because this guy is the backbone of this team. You know, they have tons of weapons for the Eagles. Tons. I mean, they've got two top receivers with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. And then they've got a great backfield. They've got a great offensive line. They've got Jalen Hurts. And then on the defensive side of the ball, their secondary is stout. They get the turnovers. They're ball hawks. And they can rush the quarterback, and they get those sacks too. So this Eagles team is actually, I'm out of all the four teams left, I'd say they're the most complete team from top to bottom when you're just looking at the roster. And that's why they've been the number one team pretty much all season long. That's why I begrudgingly every fucking week on my power rankings had to keep them at one for the most part, just because they dominated and they're still dominating. Now, the 49ers, on the other hand, they've also been a dominant team. Their defense is the best in the league. And they also, they have a spectacular roster. But at the end of the day, Brock Purdy is still a rookie. And at some point, you know, last week he did get exposed. Well, he didn't have any major turnovers or anything. He didn't have that great of a game. And that's not to say he's a bad quarterback. It's just sometimes you don't have a good game. And the Eagles' defense is just about as good as that Cowboys' defense last week. And I just kind of feel like they watched the film and they got the blueprint on how to stop this offense. And I feel like the Eagles will make the bigger plays in the end. And I just feel like, as I said, they've been the top team all season. And while the Niners, they have a shit ton of weapons on the offensive side of things, if the Eagles are able to just keep Brock Purdy in check and maybe cause a turnover here or two, that could be the difference in the game. And I unfortunately have the stupid-ass Eagles moving on to the Super Bowl, 24-21 over the Niners. Like I said, I think it's going to be a close game because these are two great teams. But the Eagles being at home, that's always a big advantage. Plus, you know, like I said, at some point, Brock Purdy's going to start to stumble. He didn't have that great of a game last week. He was able to just tread water and make the plays when he needed to. But this week, I think it's just going to be a different story because this Eagles team has been ready all season. And they really haven't let up at all, except for when Jalen Hurts was out. But Jalen Hurts looked about as healthy as he could be last week. So I don't see any issues for the Eagles this week. And like I said, I've got the Eagles moving on. So my Super Bowl matchup would be the Cincinnati Bengals versus the Philadelphia Eagles, if that's what ends up happening. But we'll see. They're both going to be good games, I expect. And like I said, you could really make an argument for any one of these teams to not only move on to the Super Bowl, but to also win the Super Bowl. I mean, you've got Patrick Mahomes, who's, like I said, the MVP of the league. Then you've got the Cincinnati Bengals, who are just not suffering a Super Bowl hangover at all. As a matter of fact, they seem to have bounce back really, really strong right now. Then you have the San Francisco 49ers, just an overall stout, stacked team from top to bottom. And then you've got the Eagles, probably the most complete team in the league. So you could really make a case for any one of those four to go to the Super Bowl and ultimately win the Super Bowl. We'll see what happens. But I've got the Cincinnati Bengals versus the Philadelphia Eagles for my Super Bowl pick at this current point in time. And then the last bit of NFL news, we actually had our first coaching hire of the season. The Carolina Panthers have decided to go with Frank Reich, which I think is a great move. I thought it was stupid that the Colts got rid of him anyways. You know, it's not his fault that he had a new quarterback every single season of his tenure there. So I think this is a great move for Carolina. They are in rebuilding mode, so I'm sure the first thing they're going to be looking at this offseason is quarterback, whether it be through the draft or through free agency or both. But they definitely need to improve on the offensive side of the ball greatly. I think their defense looks pretty good. They have room for improvement, but they're still, I mean, they've got some killers and some young dudes too on the defensive side of the ball. So I think it's more offense, and Frank Reich, I think, is going to make all the difference. So that was our first coaching hire of the NFL offseason. All right, let's move on to the NBA. We had a pretty crazy week this week in the NBA, beginning with Monday. The Sacramento Kings absolutely demolished the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, I will say the Grizzlies did not have Ja Morant playing. He was injured, but still, the Kings won 133-100. In the fourth quarter, they actually outscored Memphis 33-10 in the fourth quarter. So, big game for Sacramento there, you know. Probably the biggest surprise team of the year would be the Kings right now. And the Grizzlies are one of the best teams in the league, although Ja Morant's injury has really started to hamper them. And also Steven Adams, he's injured also. So we'll see what happens with the Grizzlies. But they did get stomped by the Kings. You know, Sabonis actually had a triple-double in that game. He had 14 points, 10 rebounds, and 11 assists. And just an overall great game from the Sacramento Kings. Then on Tuesday... what a crazy game between the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. Boston actually had a 10-point lead going into the fourth quarter. They were mostly dominating this game. You know, this actually was a game where Jimmy Butler didn't play. He was a last-minute scratch. I guess he was sick or something. So Bam Adebayo was who stepped it up. And now he made the big plays at the end of the game when it mattered the most. He had 30 points and 15 rebounds. And the Miami Heat would end up winning this game 98-95 in a huge game against Boston, who's actually had a couple of losses this week, big losses. I'll get into another one that happened last night. But Boston is, you know, they've been on fire, but this week has not been too kind to them. And they don't have any, they've got a couple injuries, but nothing like losing Ja Morant, for example, or Luka Doncic, something like that. That's a big deal. But still, yeah, they blew a 10-point lead, and that's not what you want to do. And the Miami Heat, you know, they're not the greatest team, but they're not the worst team either. As I've been saying, with them, they're a very Jekyll and Hyde team. And usually with no Jimmy Butler, you kind of would expect to not blow a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, and they most certainly did. Adebayo really stepped it up. As a matter of fact, he's been having just a great season overall for the Heat. I think he's really been like the difference for them in the paint. He's just really coming to his own this year, really having a phenomenal season and a huge win for the Miami Heat against the Boston Celtics. Then on Wednesday night, Damian Lillard is back and he went off against the Utah Jazz and a Portland Trailblazers win 134-124. Damian Lillard had 60 points, 9 three-pointers. He went 21-29, so that's efficient as hell. 8 assists, 7 rebounds, and 3 steals. The guy is on fire. You know, the 60 points is what you want to focus on, but hey, man, he still had steals, assists, and rebounds. He's just an all-around excellent point guard. He just doesn't get enough love because he's up in Portland, and nobody really recognizes the Trailblazers, especially when they have really great players like Lillard. But Lillard is just one of the top point guards in the league and continues to prove it on a nightly basis. When he's not injured, he's tops in the league, and that was a huge game for him and the Trailblazers against Utah. And then, as I mentioned, on Thursday night, last night, the Boston Celtics dropped another big game against the New York Knicks. The Knicks won in overtime, 120 to 117. Randall had the big game of the night for the Knicks. He dropped 37 points, nine rebounds, and actually made the big game free throws to seal the deal for the Knicks in this one. And then also Jalen Brunson makes some big plays. He had 29 points, 7 assists, and made the game-winning block at the end of the game. And so, as I said, Boston has suffered a couple of big losses this week, but it's been a pretty crazy week for the NBA, and Boston's starting to fall apart, but they're still one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, so... Crazy week in NBA, and then we also had a Hall of Fame announcement for the for baseball. And you know, as usual, the Baseball Writers of America continue to stump us with their not only their selections for the Hall of Fame, but their non-selections and how they select them. Well, at least this year we do get one baseball player inducted this season. And that would be Scott Rolen, the third baseman for the Phillies, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Cincinnati Reds. He did have a phenomenal career from 1996 to 2012. He's an 8-time Gold Glove winner. He has over 2,000 hits, 300 home runs, and 500 doubles. Only 35 players all-time have ever done that. He has hit a career batting average of .281. He's got 316 career home runs, 1,287 career RBI. He's a 7-time All-Star. Won the World Series with the St. Louis Cardinals in 2006. In that World Series, he went 8-for-19, had a home run and 3 doubles. So he showed up when it was necessary. He's a 1-time Silver Slugger Award winner, and he also won the Rookie of the Year in 1997. So he most certainly has the resume, and congratulations to him for making the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to go in there. As a matter of fact, I think the exact opposite when you look at all the stats there. It's just, as I've stated before, the Hall of Fame just continues to stump when they only let one person in or no people in. And there's a lot of players with actually, I would say, greater resumes. And I'm excluding any of the steroid era players. I believe some of the steroid era players deserve to be in, of course, as I've mentioned before in the past. But also, there are players not in the Hall of Fame who weren't a part of the steroid era, who didn't get caught doing steroids, who didn't get caught gambling like Pete Rose, who actually didn't do anything. And they're not anywhere near the Hall of Fame, and they continue to not let great players in. And then they let Scott Rolen in. And they're, like I said, there's a lot of players with bigger resumes than this, but hey, I'm not trying to say Scott Rolen doesn't deserve it. As a matter, like I said, he deserves it. 100% deserves to go in there. He had a stellar career, and just caps off a great, great career for him. It's just the Baseball Writers of America, they just continue to suck out loud. But anyways, let's get into this week's top five list. Since it is Championship Sunday this weekend, I decided let's do the top five greatest conference championship games of all time, because we've got quite a few. And it was a difficult list to whittle down. I think we can all agree all five of these were spectacular games. So let's start it off with number five. This is obviously going to show my Dallas Cowboys bias in this. And of course I'm going to put my Cowboys in here because it was a great spectacular championship game that they played in the 1992 NFC Championship game. It was the Dallas Cowboys at the San Francisco 49ers. This was basically the beginning of the Dallas Cowboys dynasty of the 90s. This, you know, had Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, Charles Haley, Ken Norton Jr. I mean, Darren Woodson, we had Kevin Smith, we had so many, Larry Allen, so many great players on this team. And then this also was a great 49ers team as well. Steve Young, Jerry Rice, Ronnie Lott. It's just probably just one of the greatest rivalries ever. And this was one of my favorite games of all time just because it was an absolute domination by the Cowboys, which is why I had to put it at number five, because all the four games above this are just really close games. And it was there was no way I could just, I wanted to put this game number one, of course, because hello, it's the Cowboys and it's my show and I could do what I want, but I couldn't justify it because the Cowboys dominated this game from start to finish. They caused so many turnovers in this one. Steve Young had two interceptions. And then they had a couple of fumbles as well. And the Cowboys defense just really dominated. But their offense also dominated. Going into the fourth quarter, the Cowboys had a 24-20 lead. And it looked like, they might just kind of just keep handing the ball off to Emmitt Smith, who was having a great game. But instead of that, they decided to just open it up. And right as they got their first possession in the fourth quarter, Troy Aikman connects with Alvin Harper on this big slant pass for 70 yards for a game-clinching touchdown, basically. And the Cowboys, they would go on to win this game 30-20. And Emmitt Smith would actually end up having 173 yards and two touchdowns in this game. And the Cowboys would ultimately go on to win the Super Bowl that year. Oh, what a great year. 1992, I was in second grade when the Cowboys were that great. Sucks. I miss it. But that's how it is. But at least I got to see that game. And I remember that game, and it was a great game. And I, of course, had to include it in here. Like I said, I wanted it number one, but these four above it, I think, just were overall better games. So let's move on to the number four on my top five greatest conference championship games. I have the 2007 NFC Championship game between the New York Giants and the Green Bay Packers. Now, this was the season that the New York Giants won the Super Bowl and defeated the New England Patriots, who were going into the Super Bowl undefeated. I mean, this Patriots team in 2007 was just a powerhouse. But the New York Giants, they ran into a buzzsaw, the New York Giants, and it started in this, I feel like the best game of this playoff run for the Giants was this 2007 NFC Championship game between the Packers, because the Packers were heavy favorites coming into this one. I mean, yes, that Patriots team was amazing, but this Packers team was amazing. This was the number one team in the NFC for sure, but they were right there with the Patriots. This was actually Brett Favre's last season in Green Bay. And this was your typical Green Bay frozen tundra night in Lambeau Field. They were playing in sub-zero temperatures. And if you look back at this game, you could tell. You could tell that the field is like frozen. And that just even touching one piece of grass, it's just probably like an icicle that's going to stab you. But this was good old school football. And, it looked like the Packers, Brett Favre came right out and just was having a phenomenal game with he and Donald Driver. They were connecting on big plays, but the Giants were keeping it close. They were keeping it close. They weren't letting the Packers get away with it. And then, the Packers started to fall off. Brett Favre, of course, had an interception. And so that was kind of, that was helping the Giants just keep their heads above water. And, Amani Toomer had a huge catch. There were many catches for this Giants team along this playoff run for them. And Toomer made one of this amazing catch, which was like right on the sidelines. And it was a big, I think it was a third down play, as a matter of fact. It was a huge play. Great pass by Eli Manning. But regardless, it was back and forth. And then the Giants would ultimately take it into overtime, and we're tied at 20. And the Packers would end up getting the ball first right off the bat in overtime. And you're thinking, all right, here we go, Favre. Favre's going for the Super Bowl. We're thinking he's walking right on in. No. This New York Giants defense was like, fuck yo couch, Brett Favre. Favre drops back to pass, and boom. He throws an interception, overtime interception, to Corey Webster, who runs it back and puts his team in good position. And the Giants offense is able to set their kicker up in a real nice position. And they were able to walk it off and get the game-winning field goal to move on to the Super Bowl and defeat the undefeated New England Patriots in one of probably the greatest Cinderella season of all time was this 2007 New York Giants team. Just because, like I said, this game, I think, is better than that Super Bowl. I think this was the Super Bowl. Just because, like I said, it was the frozen tundra. Nobody thinks the Giants are going to win because this Giants team backed their way into the playoffs. Nobody was thinking they were going to do shit. And they ran through some teams and they beat damn good teams the whole way. And they did it this way in every game where they just stayed in it, played great defense, caused some turnovers when they needed to, made some big catches down the stretch when they needed to, and just made the big plays in the end to ultimately get the wins. And that 2000 NFC Championship, it always sticks out in my head. To me, it's one of my favorite games, and that says a lot because I hate the Giants, but that I also hate the Packers too, so it was kind of funny to see Brett Favre's career in the Packers uniform end like that. But that was one of the greatest games, and I think that was the best game for the Giants on their way to win the Super Bowl that season. All right, now moving on to number three on my top five greatest conference championship games of all time. We have the 1986 AFC Championship game between the Denver Broncos and the Cleveland Browns. That's right, people. This is the drive. One of the greatest drives. I mean, it's called The Drive for a reason. And if you rewatch it, because I did, I rewatched it last night on YouTube. I watched highlights of the actual game, but then I rewatched the entire drive. Holy shit. That was such an insane drive. So let's get to it. You know, this is a battle between the Broncos and the Browns. It is just a defensive battle. And it's, speaking of the frozen tundra in the last matchup I was talking about, this was some shit because this was 1986 in Cleveland. I mean, this, they were muddy as fuck. It was cold as fuck. You could tell this is what we call real ass playoff football between the Broncos and the Browns. And this was the beginning of the greatness that was John Elway. So let's start off with the score is tied at 13. And we're in the fourth quarter here. And what would actually end up happening is the Browns would go up 20-13 on a nice Bernie Kosar 48-yard pass to Brian Brennan to give them the lead. And so the Broncos would just go on this last drive with I didn't write down how many minutes they actually had, but they had a couple minutes left on the clock before they would get down there. But so they're at the drive first starts off with kickoff from the Browns, and at the 2 yard line there's basically like a fumble by the Broncos player. So the Broncos have to start at their own 2 yard line, and you're thinking to yourself, shit, how's this going to happen? Well, man, John Elway just meticulously puts together this amazing drive. And I know he's not the only guy on this drive, but I mean, this drive literally had everything. It had a couple of plays where John Elway almost threw interceptions. It had like third downs where it was like, shit, are they going to make it? And they make it. And then it has like, you know, third and twos where you're like, oh, obviously they're going to make it. And they just barely get it. And it just has just about every single thing that you can go through on this drive happens. And it's just crazy how it was just, you know, put together and how they just move, 11 yards at a time, 5 yards at a time, 14 yards at a time. And they're just getting closer and closer and closer until finally they get into scoring position. And John Elway is able to just throw the pass over to Sewell to make a big catch. And then Mark Jackson was able to make the game-winning touchdown, or game-tying touchdown, or game-saving touchdown. And then, of course, they would have to make the extra point, which they ultimately do. And it's tied up at 20. And then there's only like 30-something seconds left on the clock for the Browns, so they don't get anything going in the fourth quarter. And then the Broncos are just able to put together a nice drive in overtime, and they set themselves up in field goal position and get the game-winning field goal, 23-20 in overtime. But, man, if you have never watched the drive, go on YouTube. I mean, it's like 7-9 minutes, something like that. It is crazy to watch because it's not just like big chunk of like 30-yard plays here and there. It's like a battle. I mean, this Cleveland Browns defense, I mean, I know most of us in today's day and age when we're watching football, we're just used to the shitty old Cleveland Browns. This Cleveland Browns team was no joke, especially on defense. They were just bruisers. I mean, like every single dude in this game is covered in mud. John Elway is covered in mud, and they're just like driving up the field, like just taking chunks of yardage, 11 here, 5 there. Like I said, it's just like crazy to watch. And like I said, John Elway almost threw like a couple interceptions. There's a sack. There's this. It's just a battle. And I can't imagine how defeated the Browns must have felt in that moment, just because they gave it their all in that game. And just to lose like that, that must have sucked. But that was the beginning of the greatness that was John Elway. Now, they would go on to the Super Bowl and get their asses kicked in the Super Bowl. But, that's just a great drive. That's why it's called the drive. And still to this day, nobody's really duplicated that type of drive. All right, now moving on to number 2 on my top 5 greatest conference championship games of all time, the 2006 AFC Championship game between the New England Patriots and the Indianapolis Colts. Now, we had many, many great matchups between the Colts and the Patriots because in this era, you know, it was Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. It wasn't just those two, you know. I mean, we had two great coaches between Bill Belichick and Tony Dungy, and then we just had great, like, offensive lines. They had great weapons on offense and defense. There's just huge players on both of these teams, and they just, this to me was probably the best game these two ever played. So we're in Indianapolis, and at one point the Colts find themselves in a 21-3 deficit. I mean, it's crazy because, you know, they started off looking real good, and then all of a sudden they get some turnovers. Peyton Manning throws this horrible pick to Asante Samuel, who just runs it right back for a pick six. Yeah, Asante Samuel, senior. You know, we heard about junior for the Chargers with his 3 interceptions in the wild card round. Yeah, that's where he learned it from. He got that shit from his daddy. Because he went 39 yards for a pick six against Peyton Manning. And that was a bad interception, too. I mean, like, Peyton throws it right to him. But the Colts would come back, have one of the greatest comebacks of all time. I actually wanted to put this game number 1 because this is another game that just sticks out to me when I'm thinking of just great overall playoff games I've seen in my lifetime. This championship game sticks out just as much as that 2007 championship game between the Packers and Giants. This one I think about all the time because just to how it really, to me, defines who the Colts were as a team, because they were that team who would be down, but then they could just make this epic comeback and they would get the win in the end. And against the Patriots, a team that was not known for choking, but they did it a few times, and this was the game they did it in. And so what happened was, Peyton Manning was like, nah, guys, let's just get our act together. And they would come back down 18 points and eventually end up tying this game. at 31. And I mean, it was a back and forth affair. You know, it started out, like I said, 21-3. But then once the Colts got going, And it was just back and forth between Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. This was just a beautiful show between the two of them. And so we get it. We get it tied up at 31. And then the Patriots have this beautiful drive. And they're able to put together a nice drive and get a field goal, 34-31, with 3:49 left on the clock, which says a lot because Peyton Manning can score at a moment's notice. Peyton Manning was known for that shit. So 3:49 ain't nothing to Peyton Manning. So what would happen? Peyton Manning would go on a tear. He'd find Reggie Wayne. He'd find Brian Fletcher. He would find just basically anybody he could on this last drive. And he would get them in scoring position. Then he hands off the ball to Joseph Addai, who would end up scoring the game-winning touchdown for the Colts but they left 102 on the clock. So they would go up 38-34, and there's 102. And you've got Tom Brady on the other side of the coming out on the offensive side of the ball. And he's just like Peyton. I mean, we all still see it to this day. Tom Brady coming back, and he's always known for that. And a minute two is plenty of time for him. So what happens? It's looking like Tom Brady's putting together yet another solid drive. But just wait. He throws a horrible interception to Marvin Jackson, who closes down the game, and the Colts would win 38-34. They would go on to win the Super Bowl that year, but this, I feel like, is the best matchup between these two. I mean, there are many matchups between the Colts and the Patriots in this era that were just epic. I mean, I don't know if y'all remember that one game. I think it was a Sunday night football game. Where the Patriots went for it on like a 4th-and-1, and they would throw the ball, but the Colts would make this big stand where they just they stopped them on the 4th-and-1, and they had a turnover on downs, and it just turned the whole game around, and the Colts would get that win as well. But there are so many games you could point to, but this one right here, this 2006 AFC Championship, it was crazy to watch. Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady. Two insane teams, especially of that era, and I love that game. Now, number one on my top five greatest conference championship games of all time. It pains me to put this at number one. I did not want to put this at number one, but then when I went and watched the highlights, I said to myself, Katie, you have to put it at number one. There's a reason why most people consider this to be one of the greatest games of all time. It's when you look at rankings of just games of all time, this is always in the top five, always, if not one. And I had to put it number one, and it really, really pains me. Now, luckily, I was not alive to see this, and I'm thankfully glad, because even watching the highlights, I'm like, fuck. And that would be the 1981 NFC Championship game between the Dallas Cowboys and the San Francisco 49ers. This would include the catch. Yep, the catch. And that's not really why this was such a great game. I mean, this was a battle between two great teams. This Cowboys team actually still had Tom Landry as their coach. Our quarterback was Danny White, who was like the Dak Prescott, Tony Romo of this time. You know, the guy who almost got there and never won anything. But they did have Tony Dorsett. They had Drew Pearson. Ed Too Tall Jones. So this was a stacked-ass team. But this was the beginning of the San Francisco 49ers 1980s dynasty. This had Joe Montana. They did not have Jerry Rice yet, but this had Joe Montana. This had Ronnie Lott, who actually made some bad penalties in this game. Two really big pass interference calls that would help set up the Cowboys in scoring position. But this was a crazy, crazy game. Like I said, I did not want to put this at number one, but when you watch it, you're like, shit, no wonder why people consider this such a good game, because it was back and forth. I mean, both teams, they were turning over the ball at just inopportune times. I mean, this Niners team, I believe, had like 6 total turnovers. Joe Montana had like 3 interceptions. It was a bad, sloppy-ass game from the Niners, but they were able to just keep in it and tread water and just make sure that the Cowboys really didn't get away with it. And so the Niners are down by 6 with less than 5 minutes to go. And so they would just put together this really solid drive. Joe Montana would make just some really great little plays against an excellent defense, because the Cowboys of the 80s defense and the 70s, really, that this kind of like 70s overlap, 80s overlap defense was a damn good defense. Look up Ed Too Tall Jones. If you don't know what that motherfucker's about, you need to know what that motherfucker's about. And he couldn't even stop Joe Montana on this last drive. He would just put together just some of these great passes. It just was crazy to watch, because you're like, you would see him just almost get there and almost get there. And he would just get the ball off right in the, at the perfect time. And, Dwight Clark, not only would he, get the big catch in the end, but he made some huge catches, on this last drive, but also the drive before to help the Niners keep within in distance of the Cowboys. But so yeah, Dwight Clark made some big plays along the way, but ultimately, third down at the Cowboys 6-yard line, Joe Montana rolls out and he's looking, he's got three defenders just barreling down, and he just tosses up a prayer to Dwight Clark, who just makes an amazing jump and catch at the most perfect right time to win the game for the 49ers. They would go up 28-27. Now, the Cowboys would still have some time on the clock. I believe like a minute, they would have about a minute left on the clock. And they actually would make a huge play. Danny White throws this big pass to Drew Pearson. Looks like they might make a last-second run here and get into field goal position. Hell, actually, if you see the catch that Drew Pearson makes, if he doesn't get snagged up, just barely, and it's funny too, because the play in which Drew Pearson is tackled, it's an illegal play in today's day and age. It was, he's grabbed from behind, right in between the shoulder pads, and that would be illegal in today's game, but it wasn't back then. And so they just, the Niners defense just makes the world's biggest play, so Drew Pearson isn't able to get out and get the touchdown or set them up in field goal position. But right after that play, Danny White would unfortunately fumble the football. 49ers would recover the football, and they would go on and begin the 1980s San Francisco 49ers dynasty of that era, and they would go on to win this game 28-27. As I said, it was very difficult for me to put that at number one, but I could not put that at number one, because also the Niners played a very, very sloppy game in this game, but they still were able to overcome and hold on. And I feel like this NFC Championship game is like the ultimate showing of what football is and what it's supposed to be. Is it's just a battle in the trenches between an offensive line, a defensive line. Even though one team has all these turnovers, they're still able to overcome those turnovers and put together solid drives when they need to. And same with the Cowboys too. I mean, even though it was back and forth the whole way, and even though there were many times where it looked like the Cowboys would just peter out and not get it going, but then they'd come back on the following drive and end up scoring. So it's just a hard fought battle between these two, and I had to put it at number one. I really, really at first wanted to put that 2006 AFC Championship game between the Colts and Patriots at number one, because like I said, that one always sticks out to me, but I had to put this fucking game between the Niners and Cowboys on there, even though the Cowboys lost and it's the catch and yeah, boo, 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 Niners. But you know what? I wasn't even born yet. So that's great. I didn't even have to see this, but man, that's a great game, and I feel like that's what football is. Although I feel like all five of those games are what football is, and we'll see what happens this weekend if any of these two games live up to the hype of those ones. But yeah, those were some damn good games, and like I said, it was tough for me to put that 1981 game at number one, because I don't want to put the Cowboys losing up there, but I had to. It's a great game. Undeniable. All right, guys. So enjoy the championship games this weekend. And on Monday's game, on Monday's show, we will know who is going to the Super Bowl. I will talk to you fools on Monday.